What's our relationship to it? And I think it's a lot easier to be equanimous or be accepting of it when we see it as being in flux and impermanent, moment after moment, than if we think it's just solid and there permanently. So to bring our attention really carefully to feel it. And the closer we get to physical pain with our attention, the more different it becomes than what we thought it was. The more distance we are from the physical pain, in a sense, the more painful it is, and the more closer we tend to get, the more different it tends to become. And it's fascinating to see the difference and the change. It's very kind of just fascinating. So sit with pain when it arises, and maybe ride that edge a little bit that you feel, 10 seconds more than you feel like you can. And then once you've done those 10 seconds, maybe you can decide to do 5 more seconds or 2 seconds. Just ride it and see what you learn in the process. And then you can either change your posture, or after you've been with it for a while and you feel like this is enough, sometimes it's enough just to go back to the breathing and just kind of be with your breath and let the breath, the expansion and contraction of the breathing, be kind of lubricant to ease you a little bit. Or take the breath and use the breath to breathe in and out to the place of pain. Again, as a lubricant to help you kind of relax a little bit. Or if you need to, just break your posture. Or if you really need to, just end the meditation. I don't recommend the kind of warrior approach where you just kind of tough it out at all expense. One of the hallmarks of this kind of practice is an attitude of kindness, and to be kind towards ourselves. And ultimately, I believe, our willingness to be present for our physical pain and to learn that ability allows us to increase our capacity for kindness and compassion. And I think the world needs a lot more of both of those, kindness and compassion. And if whatever ways we can develop that. So that's about all I have to say. So any questions or comments? Yes.
I'm going to have this medical procedure done, and I was asking the doctor what drug he was going to use to give me, because I like to know about those things. And he said, I'm going to give you something, and most people say that they don't even remember, when it started or what they had done or anything like that. And he seemed to think that was really a benefit that I was going to really appreciate. And I was trying to explain to him that I actually didn't like amnesiac drugs, that I actually liked to be present for whatever it was that was happening to me. And he could not comprehend what I was talking about. Yeah. And I didn't know how to get through to him. Because he just couldn't understand that I wouldn't want to not remember what was going on.
Yeah, it's a foreign concept to some people in our culture, the idea that being present for pain is, or just being present to life, in all its aspects, is actually pain and whatever, is actually very beneficial. And there's a certain amount of education that needs to happen to those people who don't understand that. Yvonne Rand, who's a Zen teacher in Marin, she had a major operation earlier this year, end of last year, and she found a doctor, a surgeon who was cooperative, and an anesthesiologist who was cooperative, and allowed her to have the operation while she stayed fully conscious. And what she did was she had local anesthesia, but they only agreed under one. The condition was that at any point, the anesthesiologist had permission to put her under. It was the anesthesiologist's decision, so he was going to monitor her really carefully. And he was, that's what they usually do anyway. I think one of the great mindfulness concentration jobs that the person can have is to be an anesthesiologist, because if they're just like, they have to be, present, not only present for you all the time, moment by moment, but they have to be with your breath. if each of us could be as present, you know, for our own breath as our anesthesiologists are for us, we would be in great hands. But anyway, so that was the agreement she had. And she got through the whole operation. And she did her breathing exercises and breathing and meditations and stayed present. And she got through the whole thing. And one of the reasons, two reasons I think she wanted to do it that way. One is she didn't, she wanted to be conscious, because Buddhism puts a great value on being conscious. But also, some people find that the general anesthesia has long-term lingering effects on the mind and our clarity and all that. And she didn't want to mess with that.
I feel quite the same way.
So good luck. You can use me as a, you know, an authority. My meditation teacher says, for whatever good that's going to do. But if I can be of service, yeah.
Well, I just came to a realization while you were talking. I have this sort of chronic problem of sleepiness during meditation, but I also have chronic pain. I have back and neck and shoulder pain. While you were talking, I was starting to pay attention to the pain I'm experiencing in my back and shoulder, and I started to fall asleep. It was really interesting for me. I've not cut that connection before.
But one of the great values of starting to do this kind of study of pain and being present for pain is we learn how, you know, all our defense mechanisms. And one of the defense mechanisms, not, not saying it's yours, but one of the classic ones is avoidance through sleep. Mm-hmm. It's
doesn't work that well.
Genevieve.
I just wanted to acknowledge what you shared with us about the car accident. Not only the physical pain that that represents for your family, but also the emotional pain that may have lingering effects.
Thank you very much. Yeah. It's actually a big deal for me personally and for my family, and certainly it lingers. And it seems like everybody, you know, basically everybody's fine now, and the collarbones are pretty easy to heal. You can't really do much for them, and it seems like my son is not really troubled by it anymore. And the doctor said that within a few years it'll be completely healed, so that you won't see a difference between the two collarbones. So that's good, but it is a big deal, and now we're kind of super protective of him, and you know, and I used to throw him in the air and do all these things, and you know, it's kind of, you know, I don't know, now I don't want to do it. I shouldn't probably do it right now. But I was thinking about that today, and I felt kind of sad, you know, kind of a loss. That, you know, this wonderful connection and joy, and that kind of a loss, I can't do that now, for at least for a while. And anyway, thank you, Genevieve. Yes.
Those of us who knew about this have been sending you metta that we say.
Yes.
Does it feel as if have you been receiving it? Have you known?
I've known about it. So I've been told by various people that it's been happening, and I don't know. I myself, you know, haven't picked up any vibes. directly, but indirectly, it's been very supportive to know that that's happening, and know it's happening kind of continuously, and know that there are people caring and people offering help and things. I think it actually makes it a lot easier and makes actually the whole healing process better for all of us. So it's very much appreciated. So thank you. So that's life. That's life, and we try to be open to all of it. And it's a mixed bag, right? So should we end with a short sitting? Just for a couple of minutes. is about pain. I thought that it's been about 3 years since I gave a talk about pain, and given the frequency that we experience pain in our lives, probably once every 3 years is not often enough. So I thought I'd talk about pain, especially in the context of meditation practice. I must admit, in talking about this subject, that has occurred to me periodically since over the last 3 years to talk about it again as a whole topic for an evening. And there's been a little reluctance on my part to do it, a little bit because it seemed like maybe no one's interested in hearing a whole talk, a whole evening devoted to the issue of physical pain. But that's probably not true. But that was kind of my concern. Sometimes when people come to do a meditation practice like this, they kind of think that the point of the practice is to get calm or relaxed. And to some degree, that sometimes happens. You get calmer and more relaxed than sometimes you were when you started, before you started the meditation. But that's not really the point of the practice. The point, ultimately, the Buddhist point of this practice is not to become calm or relaxed or at ease or equanimous. Rather, maybe we could say the point is to become open-hearted or open-minded, open-handed to life, to ourselves, which means be willing to experience life as it is in any given moment as it's happening, without our resistances, without our clingings, wanting it to be the same or wanting it to be different, or judgments, and just simply letting the moment be as it is. So I call that being open-minded or open-hearted, open-handed. And this this capacity we have to have this kind of open-heartedness is the capacity, the wonderful capacity that we all have, which in the Buddhist tradition is the gateway towards freedom, ultimate freedom. And it's a freedom that's found within life and not separate from life. Sometimes people think religious transcendental experiences are about some kind of experience that has nothing to do with this life at all. And they often then reject the world in various ways, as if the world itself is not the place where we're going to find our spiritual truth or freedom. But in the Buddhist tradition, the spiritual freedom is that ability to be in the world, but to be in it open-handed, open-minded, open-hearted, not to be closed resistance to the world. So the world and freedom are intimately connected in Buddhist tradition. It isn't that freedom is separate from the world. The freedom is really belongs to the world, but it's an ability. It's kind of like, you know, having the door open. You know, we're in the world, but with the door open rather than the door with all the locks closed and locked and shut and bolted. And this open-heartedness that we're cultivating means that we need to cultivate the ability to be open to all the joys and all the sorrows that might pass through the present moment as we open to the present moment. All the physical pains and all the wonderful physical delights that can happen to the human body. All we have to learn how to be open to all of them. Sometimes there's a tendency for people to think, well, this, you know, being open-hearted and open-minded is all great, and to be present without resistance, without clinging is all great. But I'll only do it for the pleasant parts of life. You know, that's where I'll do it. And the unpleasant parts of life, well, that doesn't really count. I mean, that's not really right, so I'm not going to do it there. But the point is to be open. Freedom is found in openness, and we can't then select what we're going to be open to. We're just open to whatever life then at the given moment presents. And one of the very common attitudes that we find in among meditators is, if only I was free of it, whatever that is. Like, if only I was free of this pain I'm having right now, my knee hurting, my back hurting, whatever, then I could meditate, or then I can really meditate. As if the physical pain is interfering with our ability to really do it right. That's very common. Have you had that, some of you? You know, and so people then will kind of, you know, look for the right cushion or the right seat or the right posture or, you know, all kinds of ways kind of to avoid the problem so they can get to the real practice once they kind of And when I first started meditating many years ago, I thought the body was just a nuisance that got in the way of the real spiritual disembodied practice. And I had to kind of put up with it, but it wasn't really, you know, what it was about. And so I had my sheer physical discomfort, and I just kind of pushed it aside and said, well, I'll just put up with this, and, you know, it's not really where it's at. And what I learned through the years is that to really open up, be open-hearted or open-minded, to be really open to life without resistance, without clinging, is to be open also to our body and to physical pain. And it's just that, that opening to physical pain is the practice when pain arises. Opening to physical joy when joy arises is the practice. But to have some notion that the physical pain or the physical joy or whatever is not the practice, keeping you from the real practice, is really doing yourself a tremendous disservice and leading you in the wrong direction with this practice. And many people give up or get discouraged when physical pain occurs in their practice. And some people even sit with fear of its possible arising, the possible arising of physical pain. And I know people who spent a lot of time in their practice either avoiding meditation practice or constantly kind of adjusting themselves because they're afraid maybe some kind of physical pain might appear. Physical pain is part of what we can expect in having a human body. And that certainly appears when we take a meditation posture. And to expect that it's not going to happen is quite unrealistic. And what I'm proposing tonight is that a deeper experience we can have with life, a deeper intimacy we can have with life, can occur if we allow ourselves to open up to our physical pain when it's there, than it is by avoiding it or distancing from it. And I think all of us know that our culture, maybe more than a lot of traditional cultures, is addicted to avoiding pain. It's sometimes said that most of the people in prison are there because of drug or alcohol problems. And drug and alcohol addictions or whatever mostly arise when people can't deal with their pain. The avoidance of pain, the pain medications, the sedatives people take, there's phenomenal things people do in our culture to avoid dealing, being present for their pain. I know some of my friends teach the mindfulness-based stress reduction, pain and stress reduction work. And one of the things they teach people in these programs is to become present for their pain, to bring their attention to their pain, to look at the pain, to be with the pain. And some of these friends who teach it say they've gotten incredibly angry responses from the participants at times, because it's counterintuitive to go into your pain, but they've been spending their whole life trying to avoid it, and the very idea that you go into it is just abhorrent to them, and that abhorrence or that fear in going into it sometimes is taken out on the poor instructor. And learning to include physical pain as part of the meditation practice, when it arises, it can be a source of much insight and much freedom. And I want to stress, you know, as it arises. I once went to a meditation teacher I had and told him that I noticed that if I sat in full lotus in my meditation posture, I had a lot more pain, but I was a lot more present. And so maybe it was good. Maybe I should sit in full lotus. And he said, Gil, listen here. He said, you don't have to go creating pain. That's not the purpose of this practice. Don't create pain. But when the pain visits you, don't run away from it either. Just then learn to sit with it. And I say all this with tremendous respect for the amount of physical pain that some people sit with in their meditation practice. There are times for some people, or certain times for a lot of people, when there's a phenomenal amount of pain that occurs, perhaps because of an injury, and perhaps for deeper other reasons, which I'll describe in a moment. I've sat in physical pain so intense that when I got up from my sitting, the place I was sitting, all around me was drenched with sweat. It was like a pool of water around me because you're sort of sitting there with the pain. I've had so much pain in my sitting that when I got up on retreat to do the walking meditation, my whole body shook throughout the whole walking period. Not that you're supposed to have that, not that I want or you expected to have that kind of pain, but pain can occur as part of the practice. And I just want to respect the intensity that it might arise for some of you at times. So in talking about pain, I'm reminded of this marvelous story that I often tell of a friend of mine who grew up here in Palo Alto area in the 60s. She was a teenager in 1966 or 67, 13 or 14, 14 I think. And she'd heard, you know, that there was this Zen priest in San Francisco who could get you high without drugs. And this was pretty cool. And so her and her 14-year-old friends went up to San Francisco to see Suzuki Roshi. And you know, came to see him and said, you know, we heard that you can get us high without taking drugs. And he kind of had this big grin on his face and said, great, coming up, you know. And he took them into the temple, and he proceeded to give them a lecture, a sermon, on the Four Noble Truths in Buddhism. And the Four Noble Truths, the first of the Noble Truths is, there is suffering. This is not what these 14-year-olds wanted to hear. A lecture, but they came to be by getting high, and here they were giving a lecture on suffering, and the cause of suffering, and you know, oh my God. But what struck my friend was the juxtaposition of this man talking about suffering and the tremendous joy that he seemed to emanate while he was talking about it. And this juxtaposition caught her attention, and she became a lifelong Zen student practicing Buddhism to try to understand how someone can have this joy while being willing to confront and be honest about suffering in a way she'd never seen anyone else before. So we'll talk about pain. Today's physical pain. There are three kinds of physical pain that might occur during meditation practice, in my analysis of it. One is structural pain. The second is psychologically rooted physical pain. And the third is what sometimes is called dharmic pain. So structural pain. Structural pain is, for example, is when pain functions as a real warning signal. There's something wrong, physically or structurally, in the body that needs our attention. And this is one of the reasons why human bodies are created in such a way they experience pain, is because if we didn't experience it, we wouldn't know that we're in trouble, and something needs our attention. And I think people have leprosy. Or it's, what is it called? It's Hansen's disease, is the right word? Named after Hansen, who was, I'm from Bergen, Norway. And Hansen was from Bergen. They had the house where he did his research. You can go visit it. So Hansen's disease, I think it's called. But leprosy, and apparently they lose the sensations in the nerves. And one of the dangers in leprosy is not the illness itself, but they go around banging themselves against things or burning themselves, and they don't know they're doing it because there's no ability to feel pain. And we should take, you know, the physical warning signal seriously. One of the difficulties in some Zen traditions is in Zen they focus a lot, staying with physical pain no matter what, kind of a warrior approach to spiritual practice. And without cultivation, without an emphasis on careful mindfulness, carefully paying attention to what's going on. And that kind of combination of gritting out pain without paying careful attention to what the pain is saying results in a lot of Zen students injuring themselves through meditation practice. I have a lot of friends who have damaged their knees because the knees hurt, and the knees are saying, help, move, because, and they just, well, I'm a good Zen student, I'm not going to pay, I'm just going to follow my breath no matter what. And they end up needing knee surgery. In mindfulness practice, it's not a practice of toughing out our experience of pain. Mindfulness is always about being mindful of what's happening, really studying and getting to know it. And if it's a real warning signal that something is wrong, or if we think it is, then by all means we should change our posture, or all means attend to it in whatever way it needs to be attended to. Some people aren't really aware of their physical pain. There's a tendency for many people to become physically numb to their body for various reasons. Some people don't live in their bodies. They've shut off their bodies entirely. They live in their heads. Some people have shut off their body because the body is really the repository or the place where we experience our emotional life. And for some people, our emotional life is too painful to be present for. And we turn away or repress our emotions. There's a corollary repression of our body, and parts of our body become numb. Or if we hold tension for chronic tension, chronically tense muscles will tend to go numb. It kind of has to protect ourselves from the discomfort, I suppose. So many people become kind of numb physically to their own pain, and then they become shut off from the warning signals, the natural wisdom of the body tell us that something is wrong. I've come across in the last 10 years at least two newspaper articles where I shouldn't talk about what I don't understand, but two articles where a woman was taken to the hospital and delivered a baby and didn't have a clue she was pregnant. I kind of find that amazing. You know, and so maybe there's things I don't understand in this world, but I do know a lot of people are kind of numb to their body signals and to what's going on inside. And so we need to pay attention to the real warning signals, bring attention to it, and it's better to err on the side of being careful than just to tough out physical pain. Another warning signal physical pain, is that somehow our posture is not aligned. We're not sitting in a good way. And then sometimes if you have like a certain back trouble when you sit, or certain leg problems or whatever, it's good to come to a meditation teacher and show your posture to them, and sometimes they can kind of show you some corrections so you don't have to kind of sit there with that physical pain unnecessarily. Sometimes physical structural pain arises from particular ways, muscular imbalances, ways in which we've held ourselves, maybe for a lifetime. People, for example, who maybe sit at a desk all day and have poor posture become kind of hunched over a lot. And their lower back gets weaker and weaker. And then they sit here, you know, in meditation posture, and the weaknesses and the tensions of that posture reveal themselves in trying to sit up straight. So the accumulated physical tensions and muscular imbalances will often reveal themselves as we sit. One of the unusual things, or one of the surprising things that happen to some people when they meditate, is that initially there's a kind of relaxation effect that meditation will have, and the physical tension we hold, some of it will begin to release. And then for some people, there's a lot of deeper tension held underneath the surface tension, kind of deeper chronic tension. And surprisingly, as we get more relaxed, the deeper tension, which has become somehow numb or unconscious, begins to show itself. And I've had people who, you can tell they're getting more relaxed, and they come and they tell me, I feel more tense, or I feel more pain. It's because as some people relax, the deeper holding, the deeper tension reveals itself. And we consider it to be very healthy that the deeper tensions reveal themselves. It's better to let these things become awake and alive again to consciousness than it is to push them back into numbness. However, that's not good news, because that means you have to be present for discomfort. But I think Buddhism thinks it's much better, immensely better, to give room and awareness for our discomforts than it is to be numb to them. There's kind of healing that can happen when we are open and willing to experience it. And then there's the kind of physical pain that can arise from psychological roots, psychological causes. Anger, fear, excitement, depression are all expressed through tensing and relaxing of specific muscles in our body. And if we spend a significant amount of time, chronically in our life, continuously in the time, living in bodies of fear, living in bodies of anger, the muscles associated with those feelings are chronically then tensed or held, or whatever way they're kind of what happens to them. And I'm kind of repeating myself slightly, but as they're constantly held, they tend to go numb from the pain or the tension or difficulty of that. As we meditate and this tension begins revealing itself, the pain, not only the physical pain associated with this holding reveals itself, but often the emotions that are connected to this kind of psychological holding will also reveal itself. Some of the reasons why some people are reluctant to be present for this physical pain when it arises is because they intuit that it's connected to some kind of psychological pain, emotional pain, which they'd rather not deal with. It's too much to deal with the fear or the grief or the sadness or whatever. And so they recoil or they resist. But the fact that some of our physical discomforts that reveal themselves as we meditate have psychological roots is very important to respect, because there's a tendency for us, when we feel physical tensions in our body, for some of us to try to fix it externally, to fix it structurally, to fix it as a physical event. For example, if there's a chronic tension and pain in a shoulder, and if you go to a doctor, the doctor might treat you from the outside, kind of physically, and just kind of give you a muscle relaxant or pain medication or whatever, but it's treating the body as a kind of a physical, structural thing. Whereas the root of it has to do with, maybe, with some kind of held grief or anger or whatever. A whole other way of dealing with it is to go into the held emotional trouble that's there and deal it from the inside out rather than structurally from the outside in. To deal with the identification, to deal with the resistance, to deal with what's happening there at the emotional level. It's quite amazing, to me. Well, not amazing, but there's many ways in which our chronic tension numbs those parts of our body that are tense. It's seemingly that sometimes the circulation seems to be cut to that area, and there's not as much blood flow, which is kind of numbing. And there seems to also be, I've read, the body seems to release endorphins when there's a lot of tension. And the endorphins can also be numbing. And we're not so sensitive anymore. The greater the degree of desensitization of the body, the greater the depersonalization of different aspects of our life. The less we feel connected to aspects of our life, the more desensitized we become. And it's all too easy in our culture, in our life, to shut off parts of ourselves. She climbs easily onto the box that seats her above the swivel chair at adult height, crosses her legs, left ankle over right, and smooths the plastic apron over her lap while the beautician lifts her ponytail and mocks, coarse as a horse's tail. Then, as if that's all there is to say, the woman at once whacks off and tosses its foot and a half into the trash. And the little girl who didn't want her haircut, but long ago learned successfully how not to say what it is she wants, how even at this minute cannot quite grasp her shock and grief, is getting her haircut. For convenience, her mother put it, the long waves gone that had been evidence at night, when loosened from their clasp, she might be secretly a princess. Rather than cry out, she grips her own wrist and looks to her mother in the mirror. But a mother is too polite or too reserved or too indifferent to defend the girl. So the girl herself takes up indifference, while pain follows a hidden channel, to a place almost unknown to her, convinced as she is that her own emotions are not the ones her life depends on. She shifts her gaze from the mother's face, back to the haircut now, so steadily, as if this short-haired child she sees were someone else. It's all too easy for us to kind of shut down. And part of what happens as we sit and meditate, that it takes work to shut ourselves down. It takes work to repress our emotions and push them away. And because it takes work, as we stop doing that, making that effort, because we're sitting and just allowing things to be and relaxing, what we're working against shows itself, reveals itself. And that is can be physically and psychologically painful. And again, this is a place where people feel, well, something is wrong with my meditation. If everything is going well with my meditation, I should just be getting calmer and calmer and more blissful and just seeing endless white light. And, you know, it should be really great. The opening of our life to ourselves in honesty is not a linear path to greater feelings of bliss and ecstasy, but rather is a completely unknown path which we don't know which way it's going to take. But our task is simply to learn how the skills to be open to it and not to resist it as it happens. And the third type, so I said there's three types. There's structural pain, there's psychologically rooted pain, and there is dharmic pain. And dharmic pain, I'm not sure exactly what it is. Dharmic, the word dharma in Buddhism kind of means the nature of the way things are, or the nature of the practice. It just seems to be a certain kinds of, sometimes very intense pain arises, which seems to arise only in the context of doing a meditation practice. It doesn't ever occur in any kind of other context in our lives. And it doesn't seem to have any purpose or any reason or any source or any understanding goes with it. It's just there. And as soon as when the meditation ends and we get up, it vanishes like that, even though it's quite intense. So we just kind of call it dharmic meditation, and since we have a name for it, it's okay. So then I want to mention some of the reasons, if I haven't done it enough, why it's useful to open to pain when it occurs. Well, first, I think it's just the nature of the practice. The practice is to become open to our experience. And if we want to do that successfully, we have to also open to pain. Another is that numbing ourselves and avoiding pain can cost us our aliveness and our sensitivity, our freedom and our understanding. I remember once in Zen practice, and when you go to stay at a traditional Zen monastery for a long period of time, they put you through a kind of rite of passage, or you have to kind of prove that you're really serious to be there, really prepared to be there. Sometimes I felt that was like a hazing, but but it was more like, you know, you have to be. They don't want people in the Zen monastery who are not really serious, and so they have kind of this hurdle you have to get through to prove you're serious. And what it entailed at Tassajara was, when you first arrive at the monastery, they place you in the meditation hall, and except for sleeping and half an hour breaks after each meal, you have to stay seated on your meditation cushion all day. You can't leave, and you have to stay there in meditation posture. And there's no, you know, you normally meditate for 40 minutes, and then there's a little break, and then you meditate again. But here, between meals, it's like, you know, 3 or 4 hour stretch, you know, and you're supposed to sit there without moving. And you do this for 5 to 10 days, and you don't know how long. You don't know where in that range it's going to be. Depends how well you sit. Someone's going to decide for you how well you're sitting. And so it's very painful not to be able to move. You sit there. And it turned out, in retrospect, I mean, I don't wish this for anybody and don't suggest it to anyone, but it turned out, in retrospect, it was very valuable for me. I learned a lot about myself doing that, because when you deal with intense pain, prolonged intense pain, and there's no escape from it, there's a way in which that becomes a mirror for ourselves in almost a way that nothing else can be. Pain is one of the phenomenally great truth sayers. It makes us really honest with ourselves, what's really going on, if you can't get away from it. Because I was all too easy in my life before that to get away from it. And when I couldn't get away from it, I saw all my tendencies, all my assigning of meaning to life and to myself and to meaning to Zen practice and to meditation and my expectations and my aspirations and my attitudes towards myself, my attitude towards pain, my attitude towards life, all kind of came concentrated on trying to cope with the pain. And if I hadn't had that intensity of the pain, I wouldn't have seen all these different aspects of my life that often are kind of unconscious or subconscious assumptions or beliefs or whatever. None of them, in the context of meeting this pain so intensely, nothing held up. None of my hopes, aspirations, my assigning of meaning to life and meaning to myself, and none of the identifications I had about who I was supposed to be and should be and to prove myself to be and defend myself to be, nothing could survive the heat of the pain. All I could do was be present for the pain. And I had to be present for the pain, and I had to be very, very attentive to what my mind did. Because if I wasn't attentive to what my mind did, I suffered. As long as I was very attentive to the pain and to what my mind did, I would notice when my mind started feeling self-pity, when my mind would have aversion or judgment or resistance. And if I could notice when the mind started to do that, I could let go of it, and I can just be there with the white pain. And white pain was fine to be with. But it wasn't fine to be with the psychological pain of self-pity and aversion and resistance and all these things I added to the pain. And this is one of the most important lessons we can learn through staying with the pain when it arises, is to see the difference between pain and what we do with the pain. And we can learn that pain, it's bad to have pain, it's uncomfortable, it's unpleasant. But there can be a kind of white anger, there can be a white pain, a kind of a neutral quality to it. It's quite fine to experience it, because the real suffering, what really makes it difficult and really makes us impatient and all this stuff, is the mental reactions that are usually so entangled with the pain. And I didn't have the luxury during this 5 to 10 day period to allow my mental reactions to be entangled with the physical pain. I had to see that they were different. And as long as I saw they were different and didn't allow myself to get caught up in the mental world of it, I could just be there with the pain. And it was quite intense, but it was okay to be there. And I had to stay. I couldn't let my mind wander for a second. If I let it wander for a second, my mind was ready to jump onto some kind of self-pity or aversion or resistance. I had to stay present. So it was a phenomenal way of concentrating myself on the present. I'm not trying to, give you an example of a good way of practicing. I'm just partly just telling you what my story is. But partly I want to say that at the end of this 5 to 10 days, I didn't know when it was going to end. And I was sitting there in the hall like this, and then the person who can tell you it's over came over and tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Okay, Gil, you can get up now." And I started crying. And the reason I started crying was I thought at that time, the thoughts I had at that moment was, I'll never be this intimate with myself again. This phenomenal intimacy, phenomenal honesty about myself, closeness with what was going on with myself, I'd never known in my life before that period. I'm never going to do it again. The good news is that, yes, you can do it that closely without physical pain. You don't have to depend on pain for that kind of honesty. But pain is also a wonderful opportunity. Pain can be a great aid to concentration, and thus also to joy. Getting concentrated, enough concentration automatically brings joy. And it's very useful to get concentrated. One of the Eightfold Paths that the Buddha taught is a right concentration, getting concentrated. And with the greater the concentration, the greater the insight and understanding we can have about what's going on in the present moment. And pain is a great concentrator. I've known a lot of people who have struggled with a lot of physical pain during the meditation. And usually for years or months or whatever, they've complained about it. If only the things would got better, I could really meditate, or I'm struggling with this pain or whatever. And then finally, the pain went away. And then they were lost. And they realized how much they had, how well the pain had functioned as a way of getting themselves concentrated and present. And they become dependent on the pain to help them become present. So I don't want anybody to become dependent on pain, but I'm just trying to say that pain itself is a very concentrating event, and concentration is very helpful for the path to freedom, to liberation. And then, to kind of follow along that, then pain is a great place to develop insight. Insight is vipassana. Vipassana meditation means insight meditation. And as we kind of stay present for pain, pain is one of the great doors for understanding ourselves, to understand the difference, for example, between the mental world of interpretation and ideas and reactions and the experience in and of itself as it is. Learning to open to physical pain when it occurs in meditation practice is a great foundation for learning how to be open towards other kinds of emotional, psychological pains when they might arise. Because for many of us, the relationship we have to physical pain is often the relationship we have to other kinds of pain. And so as we learn about ourselves and learn our reactions and responses and attitudes towards physical pain and learn how to be open to it more, that translates often to the rest of our life also, to other kinds of physical pain, emotional pain, for example. It can be very useful. Also, it's useful to be open to physical pain because physical pain is a universal human experience. And a very important part of Buddhist practice is the development of compassion. And compassion arises when we can feel the universal quality of suffering and pain so that we can share in it with other people as equals and not kind of keep ourselves aloof or distance or identify too strongly, but really meet someone else in their suffering as equals. And finally, you know, maybe another usefulness is that the more comfortable we are with pain, the more trusting we are that it's okay to experience it, the less afraid of it we are, the more grace there is in our life, the more we can kind of go through life with some kind of grace and acceptance of things as they come. So again, this is to repeating myself again, but it's important to remember that physical pain and our relationship to the pain are two different things. And one of the things that we are mindful of when we do this practice is to pay attention to the experience we're having in the present moment and what is the relationship we have to that experience. And those two almost always occur. And if we don't pay attention to our relationship, the relationship will often take unconscious directions for our life. So if there's aversion, or if there's clinging or holding on, or if there's judgment, or if there's self-criticism because of this, there's many ways we enter into relationship rather than just leaving it be. Letting it be. Let it be, let it be. I sang the Beatles song, Let It Be, to my son this last week. He was in a car accident and he broke his collarbone. He was seven months old, you know, so it was kind of tragic. And we didn't know he went to the hospital and at first thought he was fine. They sent him home. And then after he was home for a few hours, he started screaming inconsolably in a way he had never done before for hours at a time. And it was more painful for me than any pain that I've experienced for myself to have my baby, you know, up here next to my ear, screaming. You know, I think I lost some of my hearing, just, you know, screaming so intensely. And I'm so grateful to my practice that all the years that I've kind of been willing to kind of push the edge of being with my own physical pain or my own emotional pain, really gave me the tools and the ability to not just go crazy or not kind of whatever, just simply kind of to be open to my child and open to the situation as he was screaming so inconsolably and uncontrollably. And so it took us a little while to realize that something was wrong, and so finally we took him down to the hospital. And this is why I'm telling you this, is that so we came back from the hospital, and that night he woke up in the middle of the night also screaming. And I tried to do whatever I could. I held him for a couple hours and walked with him and did all the things I could think of. And because I don't sing much, it didn't occur to me. So then I started singing, you know, I'm not going to sing it to you, but you know. You know, about Mother Mary and let it be, let it be. And as soon as I started singing that song, he fell asleep. So I don't know the whole song, so now I have to get to all the lyrics. I'm superstitious. One of the values of opening up to physical pain, we don't have to jump into our greatest physical pain, but even to a little bit, when we start feeling discomfort, to ride the edge and kind of start becoming comfortable, to start exploring what it's like when physical pain arises for us in the small areas of our life, is that it really becomes important when in a situation where it's just too much, where it's just really big, like my baby crying or sooner or later, most of us will experience some kind of terrible pain. Our medical system has graced us with the ability to numb most physical pain so that we don't experience it the way we used to. But there's no guarantee that medicine is going to do it for us. And it's very, very useful to not always be running away from pain, but to develop some wisdom and understanding and skill in working with it. So I encourage you, as physical discomfort and pain might arise in your meditation practice here, to take it seriously, to take it as a part of what we're learning to develop mindfulness with, and ride the edge of it. And maybe it means staying 10 seconds longer than you normally would to this time. Maybe some other time, maybe 30 seconds longer, and maybe a minute longer. Kind of explore that edge, begin exploring and feeling what it's like. There's no need, I think, normally, to go so far that you're getting totally discouraged with yourself and the pain, that you hate meditation and dread the idea of going back and sitting again. And then you should just kind of take a break and change your posture. But what I encourage you to do is not, at the first signs of discomfort or physical discomfort, back off or run away or change your posture. But I'm hoping you understand from this talk I'm giving that there's tremendous value in going up against the edge of your discomfort and not assuming that that's failed meditation because you get uncomfortable, but rather what you're developing slowly is the ability to be open-hearted and open-minded. Understanding what our reactions are, understanding what our thoughts are. Our thoughts say, I can't stand this anymore, or it's killing me, or whatever. And seeing it as a thought, having the wisdom, understanding, finally, after maybe long practice, to see a thought as just a thought that you don't have to buy into or believe, but simply to be with it, be with the pain. Just be with the pain without believing the thoughts. Thoughts are not the pain. And when we confuse the thoughts we have with the pain, we tend to create more suffering than we need to have. One of the warnings also in talking about pain is that you don't want to, we're very careful for the attitude, which you're sure to have. So I can't suggest that you don't have this, because you'll have it. But be very careful with it. Often sooner or later, people will notice if they bring careful attention to physical pain, sometimes it disappears. And it's kind of a magic, you know, you feel this terrible pain and you've been resisting it or avoiding it for years, and then you bring your attention to it and either quickly or slowly it vanishes. Aha! I've learned this great tool and great ability. And now the next time pain comes along, you have an agenda. I'm going to bring my full attention, my full mindfulness to bear on this physical pain so that I can get rid of it. That's not being open-minded or open-hearted to it. Open-minded and open-hearted is the attitude, maybe it's going to be here forever. And that actually, when I had very intense pain in my early years of practice, that was one of the mantras that I would tell myself over and over again. I would say, what if this was forever? What is this forever? And somehow, that would give me enough composure to make it through until the next time I said it. Or the another mantra I used to say was moment after moment after moment. Just, I'll be here for this moment for the pain. Be here for this moment. As we open to the pain, what we do in mindfulness practice is we really bring ourselves really close to the physical pain. We bring our attention close to really feel it intimately, what it's like. Not just kind of be there, I'm aware of it, kind of like this. But we, in a sense, we put our attention, or put ourselves, in the middle of where the pain is and get really close to it to really feel what it's like. Feel the texture of it, the flavor of it, the taste of it. Feel all the sensations of it. When we hold ourselves at a distance from pain, pain is often this kind of a solid entity. But if you bring careful attention to it, you often find that pain is not solid, but rather it's a constantly in flux. There's a lot of different sensations that make it up. And there's sensations of tightening, of hardness, of burning, of twisting, of stabbing, of searing, of pulling, of, you know, you could probably think of some more. Intense cold, whatever. And as we feel these different sensations, and you try to pinpoint where exactly are they, the more you pinpoint them with attention, the more you actually see there's a dance. They don't stay put, they're not solid, but they flash into existence and flash out, and they move around and around different places in this particular area.